Thought I might need a wheelchair or crutches. As I was studying for this one this week, my toes took a real stomping. I need this one. You don't get it? That's, you know, step on your... Never mind. All right. I want you to know I'm not preaching this morning how I am, but how I ought to be. Matthew chapter 18. Jesus' disciples came to him and they asked, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And the parallel accounts in Mark and Luke tell us that they had been arguing with each other about which one of them was the greatest, and thus which ones would be given the top spots in Jesus' kingdom. Who would Jesus appoint as his prime minister and as chief of staff in his government? And the fact that they were arguing with each other about which one of them was the greatest, and they had this desire to be elevated over each other, revealed that they didn't have a clue about what true greatness really is. So Jesus tried to explain it to them on that occasion, and they didn't really get it. And on several occasions, Jesus tried to instill within them an understanding of what it is to really be a great human being, to really be great in the kingdom, great in the eyes of God, and they struggled to understand it. Now, the world we live in, of course, doesn't, they, like the disciples or even less, doesn't have a clue about what real greatness really is. There are some people who think that if they commit some huge crime and everybody sees it on TV, that they've achieved greatness. Some people equate greatness with fame or stardom, or maybe genius, like to be like Albert Einstein, or to be somebody who invents things like Thomas Edison. People think of Michael Phelps. They think there's a great person, or Elvis Presley, or I don't know, Aristotle, or Picasso, or Beethoven, or something. They think those are great people. I remember seeing a video clip of Muhammad Ali when he was in his prime, and they'd interview Muhammad, and he'd say, "I'm the greatest. I'm the greatest." Does greatness mean you can beat up everybody else in the world? Is it measured in ability and giftedness and talent in how much you impress other people? Is it measured in brilliance? Is it measured in societal impact? Is it measured in achievements and awards and honors? Is it measured in status and in power and wealth? As Christians, we probably have a better inclination toward what true greatness really is, but probably we still struggle to realize it, to recognize it when we see it. And we struggle even more to be it. Matthew 18, when the disciples came and asked, "Who's the greatest?" on that occasion, to help them understand it, Jesus called to himself a little child, and he had that little kid stand next to him in front of his disciples. And he said to them, "Whoever humbles himself as this child, he's the greatest in the kingdom." As I've read that before, Jesus says that whoever humbles himself as this child, he's the greatest. So I thought, okay, sounds like Jesus is saying we need to be humble like a child is humble. And I've thought about, okay, so how are children humble? And I thought, well, they're dependent and they know it, you know. So if they're by themselves, they're scared because they know they need guidance. They know they need someone to take care of them. Children realize that they don't know everything. They're teachable. They ask a lot of questions. Why is the sky blue? Where do babies come from? You know, they're teachable. They're humble in that way. They're also generally submissive. There's kids who are exceptions, but you know, generally they will submit to the will of others, so they're humble in that way. So there's those humble aspects of a kid, but as I've restudied this and looked at it also in Mark's account and Luke's account and other occasions where Jesus is teaching about greatness, the idea, I think, may not be so much that you're to be humble like a child is humble. I think more the idea is you are to humble yourself to the low status of a little child, where everybody else is more important than you. In that day and in that culture, little kids were seen as not as important as older kids and adults. One time, parents were bringing their kids to Jesus so that he could lay hands on them and bless and pray for them. And the disciples saw that and they told people, you know, get those kids out of here. The teacher doesn't have time for kids. He only has time for more important people. But I think Jesus is saying that greatness really has to do with humbling yourself to the status of a little child, where everybody else is above you in importance, and you act and you treat other people according to that mindset. Everybody else is above you. In the parallel account in Mark chapter 9, or same occasion when Jesus brought the little kid before him and he was trying to help them understand what it means to be great, Jesus explained it this way. This is Mark 9 and verse 35. He said, "If anyone wants to be first, he shall be last of all and servant of all." Like a child. Last of all. Servant of all. Low status. Another similar passage, Luke 22, verse 26. I think I'm echoing a little bit, John. Luke 22:26. He'll say, "But the one who is the greatest among you must become like the youngest, and the leader like the servant." Now all of those images, a little child, the least of these, the least of all, the servant of all, the youngest, all those have one thing in common. They describe the person at the bottom of the pecking order, the low man on the totem pole, the person whose will and whose interests do not matter as much as everybody else's. I think Jesus could have used other images. He could have said, the greatest on the team will be like the rookie or like the water boy. The greatest on the crew at work will be like the newbie, like the new guy. The greatest in the army, he's like the private. I think Jesus is saying that greatness has to do with you deciding to put other people above yourself in importance, and you being a servant, you putting the welfare of other people over your own welfare. Paul explained it this way. This is Philippians 2, verse 3 and following. He said, "Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but look out for the interests of others. Have this mind in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be held onto, but he emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant and being made in the likeness of men. Being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross." But the disciples, they still weren't getting it. So Mark chapter 10 is maybe a few weeks later. I don't know how much later than that, when he brought the child and he tried to teach him about greatness. I'm in Matthew. No wonder. Mark chapter 10, verse 35 says, "James and John, the two sons of Zebedee, came up to Jesus saying, 'Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you.'" Well, that's already an indication they're not getting this greatness thing. They're concerned about what they can get out of Jesus, what Jesus can do for them, rather than, you know, what they could do for Jesus. Do you have that mindset? What can the church do for me, rather than what I can do for the church? What can my spouse do for me, rather than what I could do for my spouse? What could I get if I were to become a friend of that person, rather than how could I bless that person if I became their friend? Well, these people, these two brothers, they have a favor to ask of Jesus. And I think James and John felt like they were especially close with Jesus. They and only Peter were the ones that Jesus took up the mountain when he was transfigured. They and Peter were the only ones who got to see that vision. On a previous occasion, they and only Peter were the ones that Jesus brought into a room and raised a certain girl from the dead. John in the Gospel of John is called the disciple whom Jesus loved. I think they felt like they were on the inner circle with Jesus. And so they come to Jesus and they say, look, Lord, we know we're close. We know that you like us and we've got a favor to ask of you. And he said to them, what do you want me to do for you? They said to him, grant that we may sit one on your right and one on your left in your glory. They imagine that when Jesus takes the throne as king, he's going to need top officials in his government. He's going to need people that he puts in charge of things, and he's going to need a right-hand man and a left-hand man. And these two brothers want to secure that position, get Jesus' word that they can have that before somebody else beats them to it and asks for those positions. These two brothers, they have ambition to be at the top. And doesn't our world praise that kind of ambition? Aren't the people who have ambition to be better than everybody else, to be the best, to climb the ladder, to have wealth, to be big, aren't those the great ones in the world or in our society? So they want these top spots. Jesus said to them, first of all, you do not know what you are asking. And in view of what he says next, I think the sense is you don't realize what's required to have the top spots in the kingdom. You don't know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink or to be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized? Now, Jesus' cup that he drinks and the baptism with which he's baptized, he's talking about his suffering. In the Garden of Gethsemane, when he knew that the hour of his suffering had come and he was sweating great drops like blood, he prayed, Father, if possible, let this cup pass from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done. In Luke 12, verse 50, when he was looking at going to Jerusalem and facing his death, he said, I have a baptism to undergo, and how distressed I am until it's accomplished. His cup and his baptism that he undergoes, he's talking about his suffering for doing the will of God that he's anticipating. And so James and John come to him, and they want the top spots, and they want to be elevated, and he says, be able to drink my cup and be baptized with my baptism that I'm going to undergo. And I don't think they really know what he's talking about. But like young men that typically think they can just do anything, they say, yeah, we're able. And Jesus says, predicting what would happen to them later in their lives, the cup that I drink, you shall be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized. But to sit on my right or on my left, this is not mine to give. But it is for those for whom it has been prepared. Now look at verse 41. Hearing this, the 10 began to feel indignant with James and John. It's not hard to picture the scene. You got these 10 disciples over here, maybe sitting around a campfire. And then you've got these two brothers that have approached Jesus over here. And they're trying to get the edge on these other 10. And they're whispering with Jesus. And look, Lord, I know we're close, and would you please just give us right-hand, left-hand position. And they're having this conversation with Jesus about these top spots. And the 10 over here, they overhear some of this, and they say, hey, what's going on over there? What do you two think you're doing? How dare you try to ask Jesus for those top positions? We have just as much right to those positions as you do. They're mad, and they're jealous. Because they all wanted those top spots. They all wanted to be above everybody else. They wanted glory and power and wealth and all the perks that come with being at the top. And so Jesus said, hey, everybody be quiet. Come here and listen to me. Verse 42. Calling them to himself, Jesus said to them, trying to explain to them again what it is, what real greatness really is. He says, you know that those who are recognized as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. To illustrate it, he could have said, Judas, you keep the money box, toss me a coin. And he could have taken one of the coins that they used in that day, and he could have said, you know, on the head side, there'd be a picture of Tiberius or Augustus, one of the Roman rulers. And then you could flip it over to the tail side, and it would say, he who deserves adoration. And Jesus could have said, you see, those who are great in the eyes of the world are people, these people who promote themselves, who want to convince everybody else that they are better than them and that they are more deserving of adoration than anybody else. And they seek respect and they seek to be praised and they want people just fawning all over them and saying, how wonderful you are, what can I get you? And they assert their will over other people. And they treat other people as less important. And they want to be treated as more important. These are the people who are great in the eyes of the world. But Jesus says, verse 43, but it is not this way among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you shall be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. Greatness is found in quiet, humble, selfless service. Greatness is not found in people getting attention for their service like I am this morning. It is not found in getting paid. It is not found in being noticed or receiving applause for what you do. It is found in humble servants who serve not for pay and not for recognition, but just to please God and help souls. I can imagine when I get to heaven, I'm going to see Jesus sitting on his throne, and then I'm going to be ready to see at his right hand and on his left some famous preachers or some great Christian author or some really well-known, you know, people sitting right up there at his right hand and on his left. And then I'm going to look and I'm going to say, what? What's Glenda Johnson doing sitting up there? What's Kathy Scott doing sitting up there? There's Joanne sitting, you know. Lots of examples I could use. But greatness is not, it has nothing to do with gaining attention, power, wealth, ability, anything like that. It is humble, selfless service where you put everybody else above you. Even the lowest of people, kids, poor people, handicapped, you put them in front of yourself. Those are the greatest. Jesus said a lot of times in the Gospels, the last shall be first and the first last. The people that put themselves under everybody else and everybody else comes before them, they're the greatest. Sometimes we don't get it when we talk in broad, general terms. Sometimes we need to get more specific. And Jesus, reading in the Gospels this week, I noticed a lot of times he brings out specific ways in which greatness is exhibited. So let's just look at a few. Let's look at Luke 14. Luke 14, starting at verse 7. Jesus is at a dinner at a Pharisee's house. And he began speaking a parable to the invited guests when he noticed how they had been picking out the places of honor at the table. So a lot of times when they'd have a banquet, everybody would sit around the table in a U shape. And at the center of the U, or the head of the table, would be the host. And the seats closest to the head of the table, closest to the host, would be the seats of highest honor. And then the further away you were from the head of the table, the less honorable the place. Well, Jesus is watching guests come in, and they're taking the places of honor. And so he told them a parable. It says, when you're invited by someone to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor, for someone more distinguished than you may have been invited by him, and he who invited you both will come and say to you, give your place to this man, and then in disgrace you will proceed to occupy the last place. But when you are invited, go and recline at the last place, so that When the one who has invited you comes, he may say to you, friend, move up higher. Then you will have honor in the sight of all who are at the table with you. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, or everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. Now, Luke tells us that this was a parable that Jesus told. So he wasn't just telling a story about how it is on earth around banquet tables. This was illustrating a spiritual truth. I think it's illustrating what God will do with those who exalt themselves and what God will do with those who humble themselves. But you can see in the story a specific about what it is to humble yourself and what it is to exalt yourself. How to be not so great and how to be more great. Greatness has to do with taking the less desirable seats so others could have the more desirable seats. Greatness is not shouting shotgun, you know, on your way out to a car with a group of people. Greatness is you take back seat in the middle with your seat up, feet on the hump, right? And unless you're old, unless physically difficult, not that anybody here is old or has any physical issues. Greatness is taking the seat of watching kids so parents could have a seat at the movies. Greatness is maybe taking the seat of driving someone who needs a ride, so you have to have the seat of an expensive taxi. You take the less desirable seat so others have the more desirable seat. Well, there's another specific, verse 12. He also went on to say to the one who had invited him, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors. Otherwise, they may also invite you in return, and that will be your repayment. But when you give a reception, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, since they do not have the means to repay you, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Now, of course, he's not saying don't ever have your friends and family over for dinner. But what he's saying is that's not really of credit to you, because they're probably just going to return the favor. But a mark of greatness is giving and serving people who are probably not going to return the favor. Investing your time, investing your money and effort into people just for their good, who are not going to probably invest anything in you. That's greatness. Here's another one. How about Matthew chapter 6? Matthew 6 and verse 1 says, beware of practicing your righteousness before men to be noticed by them. Otherwise, you have no reward with your Father who is in heaven. So when you give to the poor, do not sound a trumpet before you, as do the hypocrites, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, so that they may be honored by men. Truly I say to you, they have their reward in full. But when you give to the poor, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving will be in secret, and your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. When you pray, you are not to be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and on the street corners so that they may be seen by men. Truly I say to you, they have their reward in full. But you, when you pray, go into your inner room, close your door, and pray to your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. In other words, you do good things, the things God wants you to do, like pray and give when nobody else knows about it, and don't tell anybody about it. Pray this week. Give to somebody who needs help. Put your arm around someone, tell them you appreciate them. Bring someone a coffee. Clean up someone's mess. Put yourself out there with somebody at work and speak to them a word about the Lord. Do those things and don't tell anybody about it. Just do those things to please God and to help other people. Let's look at one more passage. And this is one where Jesus demonstrated to us some of the specifics of what it means to really be great. John chapter 13. This is at the last meal Jesus had before his death. And Jesus did something at that table, and then after he did it, he said to his disciples, "Do you realize what I've done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, the Lord and the teacher, did this, you also ought to do this. I have given you an example for you to do as I have done." And here's what he did. John 13, verse 2. "During supper, the devil, having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come forth from God and was going back to God, got up from supper and laid aside his garments, and taking a towel, he girded himself. Then he poured water into the basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. And then he proceeded to wash every one of those disciples' dirty, stinking feet. And he said, I've given you an example." There are four things I take from that about that are expressions of greatness. Number one, I see from Jesus that greatness is serving when the task may be humiliating. You know, washing feet, that was a task for the lowest of slaves. Normally, it was the youngest slave or the newest slave that would have to do that task. Are there times when we pass up opportunities to serve because the task is too low for us? It's for lower people than us. The task is too degrading, too humiliating for us. Maybe scrubbing floors or bathrooms, maybe babysitting kids, or if you're in junior high or high school, you know, visiting and eating lunch with the not-so-cool kids. Is that for lower people? The Son of God came and there were not tasks that were too low for him. He wasn't above those things. Another thing I learned from Jesus is that greatness is serving when your own circumstances make it difficult. You realize this was Jesus' last meal before he went to the cross and he knew it. He was stressed out. He was in mental and emotional agony. If I were Jesus, I would probably think things like, you know, I'm about to do the greatest service for mankind that's ever been done, death on a cross for the sins of the world. I think I deserve to take it easy right now. I deserve a break. I deserve to be served for a little bit. But Jesus saw what he could do, and even despite his circumstances, he washed their feet. How many times do we have opportunities to serve, and instead of serving, we make excuses like, I'm tired. I'm a little stressed right now. I've already done my fair share already. It's not my turn. I deserve a break. I need a little time to myself. Greatness is serving when the task might be humbling. It's serving when your own circumstances make it tough. And then I also see in Jesus that greatness takes initiative in serving. You know, it wasn't Jesus' job to wash the disciples' feet. It was usually expected for the owner of the house to have one of his servants wash the guest's feet. And so this was not Jesus' job. This was somebody else should have done this. And nobody asked Jesus to do it. But Jesus didn't do like we do a lot and wait around for the person whose job it was to do it. And he didn't say, well, you know, I'd be willing if somebody would just ask me to do it. If somebody had assigned me a task, then I would do it. Jesus just saw something that he could do. Didn't matter that nobody expected him to do it, and he just did that kind thing for everybody. So there's lots of occasions I can think of where maybe we see things, but it's not our job, or we haven't been asked. So you see a mess, and it's not your mess. You didn't make it. Somebody else made the mess, and they just left it. And it's not your job to clean up around here. Somebody else is the one paid to do that. You see something broken. You see something that could be replaced. You see something that could be painted. You see where your neighbor could use a hand with his fence, with his car, with his kids. You know, but it's not your fence, it's not your car, it's not, they're not your kids, it's not your responsibility. You see new people at church, but nobody's asked you to be the greeter. Nobody's assigned you the task of greeter. It's not your wife's birthday. It's not Valentine's Day. It's not your anniversary. It's not Mother's Day. She's not expecting anything. If you're a young person in your parents' home, they haven't asked you to do dishes. They haven't asked you to clean up the dog poop. Whatever. Greatness is taking initiative and serving. If the task may be humbling, if the task, even if it's difficult because of our circumstances, Jesus just looked for what he could do and he did those things. One more thing I learned from what Jesus did there is that greatness is serving even people who mistreat you. You notice he was, as he's going around to each of the disciples and he's washing their feet, he came to the dirty feet of Judas Iscariot, who for 30 shekels of silver was about to lead a mob of people who hate Jesus to him when he was away from the crowds, so that without starting a riot, they could arrest him and have their way with him. What would you do if you came, if you're washing feet, and you came to the dirty feet of somebody who is about to really hurt you just for some money? I'd probably skip over them and wash the next disciple's feet. I might accidentally dump the basin of dirty feet water on him. Jesus came to Judas' feet, and he removed his sandals, and he washed the dirt off his feet, and he dried his feet with a towel, just like he did to all the disciples. What do we do about people who gossip about us? What do we do about people who have insulted us? What do we do about people we know in the world whose character and lives are repulsive to us? What do we do about people who would never lift a finger to do anything for us? So let me end here reading what Jesus said, verse 12 and following. So when he had washed their feet and taken his garments and reclined at the table again, he said to them, "Do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, the Lord and the teacher, washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I gave you an example that you should do as I did to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a slave is not greater than his master, nor is one who is sent greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them." Did you get that last part? If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them. Well, now we know these things, unless you manage to tune me out. But Jesus says, now that you know these things, you are blessed if you do them. Knowing plus X equals blessed. X is doing these things. The Father is looking down from heaven. He's looking for quiet, humble, selfless servants who are just motivated out of pleasing God and helping people, and they put everybody else above them. I don't know about you, but this is challenging to me. It impresses upon me I fall short. This is something for me to remember, to constantly be examining my heart and constantly keeping my prayers. Let's stand together. Let's sing. If we could help you, if we could pray for you for something specific or help you obey the Lord in your life, please let us do that while we sing.